Well, good morning, everybody. It's a great deal of pleasure that I introduce my guest this morning. He's a man that I worked with for over 12 years when I started my broadcasting career. Not only a great friend, but a wonderful mentor and a man that I've had a friendship that's extended over 40 years with. And it's my pleasure this morning to say good morning to John Russell, JR. How are you, son?
Very good morning to you, Brian. Lovely to have you back again after all these years
At the home of Straight Draw, here we are in Hanson Street, Mount Waverley. And Straight Draw, 1957 Melbourne Cup winner.
Yes, he was. He won the Melbourne Cup and did me a great turn because I had him as the second leg of my double with Tullock. And fortunately, I had a double going which... Dear old Len Jewson, who was the top doubles bookie at the time, gave me £500 to five. Actually, it was nothing because I didn't put the fiver in. But £500, Tullock, who won the Caulfield Cup, of course, and Straight Draw saluted in the Melbourne Cup. But goodness knows, had Tullock have started in the Melbourne Cup, I think he'd have won. So I was very glad. I'm one of the few people that was glad that Tullock did not start, because I'm surely he'd have won it.
Nearly 60 years ago, John, so 500 quid's a bit of money then.
Well, a lot of money, but it's a fortune to put a few bricks in my house or our house. And fortunately, I went up to, on the proceeds of that, went up to Queensland on a holiday in the car, and I saw a horse called Booklink win the Doomben Cup. It beat a horse called Baystone, and Sailor's Guide ran third. And I said to my wife at the time, I said... that horse, Baystone, would be an ideal horse for the Melbourne Cup, an old, tough old horse and that, and well prepared by Jack Green. I thought, I'll have a look at his price when I come back home to Melbourne. So back I came and immediately went to the doubles bookies charts. Chris Jenkins was one of the leading doubles bookies at the time, and he had Baystone at 200-1. But muggins me, of course, didn't take it, did I? So it remained at 200-1 for 2 weeks, and then it got down to 100-1. And then instead of saying, well, I'm going to have something on this at the 100-1, I decided to ask questions of various people coming from Sydney as to how Baystone was going with a view to the Melbourne Cup. And each one of them that I spoke to said, oh, I couldn't win a Melbourne Cup, and put me right off the scene. And then along came Baystone and ran last in three weight for age races going up to the Melbourne Cup time, and I thought, well, I dropped right off it then, didn't I? And of course, along comes Baystone and wins the Hotham Handicap, and then he wins the Melbourne Cup, and I'm not on. Another story of the turf, Brian. Many of them.
Yeah, the punt, John. Would have and could have.
Would have and could have. Yeah, that's true too.
Now, you were born in Warrnambool, and a career in race broadcasting for 54 years, and we'll get to where you, you know, your time at 3UZ and working with the great Bert Bryant and then taking over the role in your own right as the chief caller. It's been a fabulous time in racing for you, and it started, as I say, way back in the pre-Depression years, back in 1930 when you were born, and from a fairly large family.
Well, the first signs I had of being indoctrinated, shall we say, into the racing scenario was when I was taken to the Warrnambool Racecourse by my family there and saw this horse coming down the straight in a clockwise direction. And I noted the colours were black and white diamonds and a black cap. And that was a horse called Why Fail, who that day won the Grand Annual Steeplechase. And I think that was the forerunner of me getting the colour situation into my nut for that time. And then, of course, time went on, and my family had a big boarding house in Warrnambool down to the railway station. And this old gentleman who occupied one of the rooms, Donald MacDonald, used to send me up on a Friday afternoon to buy the Truth newspaper. Because it had a very, very good form guide. And I'd go up, as soon as I got home from school, he'd give me the money, the sixpence I think it was, and I'd go up and to the newsagent and get the paper and bring it back, and he'd show me all these various heads of different prominent people of the time and prominent horses such as, well, Jack Holt and Lou Robertson and those fellas, and great horses such as Ajax. And they had some wonderful pictorial highlights in that Truth newspaper form guide at the time, and he'd point things out, and I became quite fascinated, plus the fact I used to listen on our big radio set, as it was, or wireless they called it in those days, to the likes of Jim Carroll, who was one of the leading commentators at the time. He called for the ABC, and Eric Welch, of course, called for 3DB. They were the two, in fact, the only two, and Fred Tupper, of course. I forgot dear old Fred, didn't I? Fred called for 3RW. So we only had three commentators at the time covering racing in that era. My favourites were Carroll and Eric Welch. So I used to listen and listen, and I had an empty condensed milk tin, which I used to call into and mimic these wonderful callers, you know, and call races to myself. People must have thought I was half mad, which I probably was, but anyway, it served a purpose, as it turned out. But anyway, time went by, and I wouldn't go to school late in my career at schooling. I decided to keep away from it and concentrate on horses. And at our home, we had a big room at the back, which I'd transferred or developed into a little race course with the aid of chalk. It was the circumference of a racetrack and little markers, and had these little horses on blocks. And with the aid of a dice, which I'd roll the dice and say it had come out two, and I'd move that horse up two and say with the other horses. So that was my further introduction into the sporting sphere.
And John, you were one of six children, and you were the youngest by some 22 years. So it was a massive gap from you to the next.
There was a big gap, yeah, a very big gap. I can't comment any further on that, because that's the math. That's what the record says.
and your dad was a ganger working for the railways, and mum ran the boarding house.
That's right. Oh, yeah, we had a lot of boarders, a lot of characters there. You know, a lot of railway people used to come up, because we weren't far from the Warrnambool railway station. And one of the other great delights of my early days was when the race carnival came along in January. They had two carnivals, one in January, a two-day carnival, and the three-day carnival, of course, the grand annual. And these horses had come down by train, and it gave us, the kids around the area, great delight to stand on the medium strip and see these horses being led up from the railway station to their stables in the heart of the town, you know. And you'd say, you'd call out to the fellow leading the horse, "What's its name, mister?" And he'd either grunt or say nothing, or mind your own business with the three. The three retorts we got out of those blokes, because they were pretty secretive in those days, a lot more secretive than what they are now.
And these are the days of no tote. It was SPs up lanes, and every second shop would have an SP working from the back of the shop. And did you started to get into the punt?
Oh, yes. Well, I think half of my money that I had saved went into an SP bookmaker's bag. I was notoriously bad judge, unfortunately, and didn't back many winners, and the SPs usually got the lot, but they were rife in those days. Mm. I remember one day, I had a winning day, actually, in 1943, the bookmaker betting at the Grand Central Hotel in Warrnambool, which was owned by your good friends, Mr. and Mrs. Bill Gleeson, Bill and Nan Gleeson, whom you knew very well.
Yes, I did.
and I think he went down, was down a lane somewhere there, and I backed five out of the six winners and won about two bob. So it was pretty ordinary, but still, most of the other days were losing days, I might add.
Mm-hmm. And your radio career sort of started, but it started via the local district football at 3YB. And at one stage, did you actually have to do a commentary at a rodeo?
Oh, a rodeo. The manager of 3UZ, not 3UZ, but 3YB, Warrnambool, called us in, myself and a friend of mine. Dick McGree was his name. He still exists now, Dick, and a great friend of mine. And we were called upon to do this rodeo. And I said to the manager of 3YB, "I know nothing about rodeos." And he said, "Well, you're in, son, whether you like it or not." And how we got away with 5 hours of total you-know-what, I'll never know. But we got away with it, and I was glad when it was over. And that's all I knew about rodeos, and I still don't know anything about them.
What about standing on the boundary in the Hampden League doing the football one particular day in a brand-new overcoat? What happened that day?
Well, my wife at the time was living in Melbourne, and I was ready to go down to Melbourne to see her, and I'd bought this beautiful overcoat at Harry Taylor's menswear store in Warrnambool. Beautiful coat it was, cost £6. It was a fortune. And in those days, we had no cover calling the football. And the Warrnambool Showgrounds this day, Colac came down to play Warrnambool. And the Colac football team was always accompanied by a dear lady's cheer squad. Used to go around everywhere with Colac when they went too. And they used to stand not far from me and give me the raspberry and call out and all sorts of insults while I'm trying to concentrate on the football. But this particular day was a very wet day, and I was getting wet as it was. And anyway, when the final bell went, these dear old, lovely ladies, they turned out to be too, ran over and pushed me over, and over I went into the mud with a microphone, my beautiful overcoat. And of course, I rode the microphone to the ground in true radio man's style, shall I say, and the coat was a disgrace, you know, and I made the mistake of trying to rub the mud stains off it, which I found out later you leave them there and they'll brush off, but I wasn't to know that. But I had this beautiful coat all ready to show my wife of next day when I arrived in Melbourne, and here it was virtually a mud heap.
Did you give them a spray?
Oh, what? Well, but they're gone. Oh, they were very clever, those ladies. They nicked off before I got away from the microphone and got things reorganised.
The chance to get that break, which every young race caller waits for and hopefully does get to come to Melbourne, was in 1953.
That's
right.
Yes, well, that was interesting because Bert Bryant was the star of the time, a great broadcaster, as you and I both know. Mm. And we shifted from Warrnambool to Melbourne in 1953, and that was an interesting story too, because I had no intention of leaving Warrnambool, but my wife wanted to live in Melbourne, and it was arranged this particular time that she was coming down to see her parents, and she was said, "I'm going to buy a house in Melbourne." I said, "You can't possibly. We've got 50 quid in the bank. You can't. Haven't got the money." And at the same time, I had my eyes on a nice Prefect motor car, which I was going to buy from the garage where I worked at in those days, EA Wright Motors Ford. And the deal was that on the Tuesday night I was to ring her to tell her that I was going to buy the Prefect, and I did ring on the Tuesday night, but the only thing was that she'd already bought a house in Brunswick. Mm. And I said, "Hey, you can't do it." She said, "Well, I borrowed money off my sister and also my sister, the two of them, and with that money put a deposit on this house at Brunswick." So I had to go through with the deal, which it was very fortunate that I did in view of subsequent events that followed. So off we went to Melbourne in May of 1953.
And that started a wonderful career in radio down here in Melbourne with the Greater 3UZ, which was the top rating radio station, particularly for racing and the three codes. And we'll come back with JR, Johnny Russell, in just a moment. This is Your Racing Life. John Russell, my special guest. Johnny Russell, JR, my guest this morning. Now, John, you've arrived at the Greater 3UZ in Melbourne. It's 1953. Bert Bryant had been there for a couple of years before you. He'd taken over from Tom Moon, the broadcaster.
That's correct. He did, yes. Bert called his first Melbourne Cup a Delta beat Akbar, if you remember that particular year. But having met Bert when he used to come to Warrnambool for the races, I had an inside run. But at the time when we shifted to Melbourne, there was nothing on the horizon because Frank O'Brien was firmly entrenched as Bert's assistant. And I thought, well, he'll be there forever, Frank. And then, amazingly, Fred Tupper, who was the leading racing commentator at 3AW, decided to retire, and there was an opening at 3UZ. And with my knowing Bert and having met him on several occasions, I was lucky enough to get the job as his assistant. And Frank, of course, was then at 3AW. But ironically and unfortunately for Frank, some 6 months later, Fred, the 3AW outfit turned up not broadcasting any horse racing, and Frank was out of a job. But by that time, I was well entrenched at 3UZ, where I had been from the October of that year until the end of 1983.
John, it was an amazing time in the 50s where four radio stations would actually cover the races on a Saturday.
Yes, that's true. And gradually it dwindled its way down to two. We had 3UZ and, oh, in fact, 3UZ, 3DB and the ABC. But they were wonderful days. I couldn't speak highly enough of some of the people I met in them and still do, of course, although the ranks are dwindling now, as you know, with the people, the race goers. But in those days, you know, it just roll along. And there wasn't much racing there, Brian, either. For instance, our workload, Bert Bryant and myself, would say start on a Monday, which was nothing, so we'd play squash. And on Tuesday, we might have a visit to an occasional hotel because there's nothing on that day either. And Wednesday were the races, an occasional meeting on the Thursday. Saturday, for Bert, it was the city races. For me, it was the country meeting. And then back for the trots, as they called them in those days. Now they call it harness racing. It's a much nicer term than trots, I suppose. But it was the trots in those days, whether you liked it or not. And that's what was my workload. And that went on for some time until the racing scenario got heavier and heavier. Mm-hmm. And look what it is today.
Yeah. We'll talk about in a moment. But the 24 years you work with the great Bert Bryant, the wonderful broadcaster, he commanded an audience like no other. And at the time, we had this amazing luxury of two broadcasters like Bert Bryant and Bill Collins on the same day.
That's true, yes. And they were... you know, really the ones to listen to. That both had big audiences. In fact, our audience was and the whole of 3UZ, I suppose, over many years, as you'll agree too, having been there as long as you were, that they were always one or two on the league ladder as far as popularity was concerned at 3UZ, you know. And it was a terrible blow, of course, when it finished in 83.
It should never have finished. John, those carnivals, and I came to 3UZ from Adelaide in 1972, so I was there from 72 to 84. But I remember meeting you for the first time, and we went to the Kilmore Trots on the Monday, and it was about the third week of June, 72, so it was the first time we'd met. And your words to me as we drove, we met at 3UZ in Bourke Street, drove out through Sydney Road and out, you know, onto the highway out that way, the Hume Highway. And I remember you saying to me, remember one thing, a champion team will always beat a team of champions. And I never forgot that advice.
Well, it's true too. If a champion team does defeat a team of champions, and that's been proven over a long period. I thought you were referring to my Restoria that I used on my hair at the time when we were driving to Kilmore that day.
I remember that day vividly because you... you were a little bit sort of follically, what's the word? Well, yeah, let's see, had a receding hairline, let's say, challenged. And you'd purchased a toupee, and it took my attention. I don't know why, but it did. And I remember years later you said, why did you keep looking at that toupee? So it wasn't the toupee, John. It was the price tag from Kmart hanging down the back.
Well, you know, it put me off for the rest of the day. I couldn't get over that remark of yours, Brian. Anyway, it didn't last long with me, I must tell you.
You threw it into a cupboard, didn't you?
I did. It's still there.
And, John, those who know you and thousands do know you, you're always a hat man.
Yes, well, I suppose all hats in those days. If you go back to seeing the old pictures of various racecourses and crowds at racecourses, up until, say, I think the scenario started, the third time I've used scenario, I won't use it again, Brian. In those days, most people wore hats. In fact, I don't think you could have gone to the racecourse without a hat, but it started to change, and now the hats are conspicuous by their absence. But I always wear one of those Borsellinos. I think Bert started the trend in those Borsellino hats, those pearl grey Borsellino hats. So all around him had a Borsellino that were connected with the racing business. But I continue to use them anyway, and I still do.
I worked with Bert from 72 to about 76, 77, but knew him and a great admirer of Bert Bryant as a racing commentator. But I think he's nearly the worst punter I've ever encountered. He didn't back many winners.
Well, for the money he put on horses, I'd like to have got a quarter of it now, or have a quarter of it, because he was such an unlucky punter, as you know. Unlucky was the word, the right word, because he could not back a winner, and he used to put plenty on too.
Well, he was, they say, the highest paid radio man at the time, and I suppose what you do with what you earn is your own business, but he loved the tip, didn't he? He just loved the tip.
Oh, absolutely. And I remember one time, and I should tell this against myself, and I'm not that proud of it, but it's an old word or two words called Even Stevens. Bert sent me down this day at Moonee Valley to put $100 or 100 quid, I think it was in those days, on Miss Gilpin. And naturally, I looked around for the best odds I could get for him. and secured 13-2, 650-100 Miss Gilpin. And by that time, Miss Gilpin had got into 5-2. And I gave Bert or told him that I'd had the 650-100 Miss Gilpin. And he said thanks. And anyway, I brought the money back and he said thanks. He never gave me a halfpenny out of it, which I thought was pretty poor. But sometime later, there's always the evener up. At Flemington, he gave me 100 to put on a horse called Carbon Flight. And I searched and searched and got 11-2 Carbon Flight for him. Needless to say, in my wisdom, Bert was returned 9-2. So there was a little present there for myself, due to my hard work.
As you'd always say, something for the sweeper.
Something for the sweeper, that's the go, yeah, absolutely.
You talk about those days, and I enjoyed them too, but you had a long innings at it of doing the country races, and you'd make a dash from Mowi from the Saturday calling to be at the showgrounds by 6:30, 6:45 for the first race.
I don't realise, and I don't know now how I did that, you know, coming back from after a big day in the country, driving to the country, first of all, doing the races there, and then coming back for the night trot. So you can imagine what my brain was like at the end of the day. But that went on and on and on, and until the time came, I was lucky enough to call the Inter-Dominions, a round of them, I might say, in 1969 with Richmond Lass. Then 70, Bull David, that was at the showgrounds. 71 was Junior's Image in New Zealand, which was later disqualified, and Stella Frost got the race. I didn't go in 72. 73 was Hondo Grattan in Sydney. 74 was Hondo Grattan in Perth. 75 Young Quinn
in New Zealand. Now, just back to that 74 one, was that the year of Just Too Good, where you had the juicy odds before the final?
Did I ever, yeah. Well, dear old Tony Haynes is now deceased, unfortunately. He was offering 6-1 Just Too Good for the Inter-Dominion final, and I had $100 on it, which was a lot of money, or $100 it was then, may have been quids or dollars, not too sure, but anyway, $100 on it at the sixes, and it got into a 2-1 favourite for the final, you know. And I said to him on the night before at the Tats Club in Perth, how are you going to settle up with all this money, you know, if Just Too Good wins? He said, I think I'll be taking names and addresses. But fortunately, bookies prevail again. What do you think's happened? Just Too Good began well, and then after a start, about 100 yards had gone, and he knuckled over and he fell over. And most of the field fell over him. And that year, there were only four left, you remember, and Hondo Grattan was able to avoid the interference and go on and win the race. Yeah.
It was total carnage.
So bookies
race,
were protected again.
I remember this, it was shortly after the start, the field was obliterated.
It was. And Brett Armour, I think, was the horse that led. And Hondo
horse
had
from Victoria,
That's right. Hondo had the perfect sit behind him and was able to just outsprint him in the run home.
Your chance to call a Melbourne Cup, you called 20 Melbourne Cups, and your chance came in 1977, basically through the ill health of Bert.
Well, sadly, and you will remember, because it was your birthday when we got the bad news that Bert had an aneurysm, I think it was, and he couldn't go on that Easter weekend, and we had to sort of change our tacks. You went to Stall for the Stall gift, and I did Caulfield that particular day. So that was your first Stall gift.
That's amazing. I did the Stall gift. It was Warren Edmondson from America, and he won the gift in 1977 because you had a great association with the Stall gift, because you were a pro runner in your boyhood days through the Warrnambool area.
I was a real good runner too. I ran for 6 years and never got a place. And when the time came for me to prove how good I was, I got the job at UZ, so I couldn't participate anymore in professional foot running, unfortunately.
Could have been anything.
I'll never know till this day whether I could have won that 880 at Stall or not.
And you loved the foot running, and you loved doing the gift there at Stall.
Oh, yes, and I've seen some marvellous runners over the time. Of course, that fellow that came from Madagascar, he was a good runner. He was a top runner, in fact.
Now he had the strangest name, Ravello Manantosa, is that right?
Jean-Louis Ravello Manantosa.
Yeah, 1975.
1976 or
75? 75 it was, 75, and he came off scratch.
Yeah, he did. The only runner to win off scratch too. But had we have used his whole name in the 12 seconds we had for the distance of the gift, which was 120 metres, we wouldn't have named any other runners. So Lawrence Costin, who worked for 3DB at the time, and he was doing the job for 3DB, I was doing the job for 3UZ, decided to abbreviate Mr. Jean-Louis Ravello Meninsoa's name to Ravello. So by that method, we had him as Ravello, and we were able to name several other runners before Ravello came flying past and got up and won.
Well, I've got something here for you, John, from the archives. 41 years ago, this is the final of the Stall Gift, and the commentator is Johnny Russell on 3UZ with Ravello.
Set, Marks, McGregor, Dore, Ravello. Away they go. Perfect start to Ravello. Commenced brilliantly. Logan is the early leader coming down towards the 100-metre mark. Now Ravello is finishing strongly, and also McGregor is there, and now Ravello getting through, and it's Ravello. Ravello has won from second. McGregor, maybe Marks third, and then Logan and Dore in that order.
Well, there he is. He ran 12 seconds flat. Now, he was brought out here, I reckon, by John Tolman at the time.
He certainly was, and John, in fact, had to make him run because Foster's or Carlton United Breweries paid his way out here, and on the Monday, he wasn't going to run Ravello, and John had the dickens of a job getting him to get him to the post, really. And when he did, of course, he spread-eagled them in that, first of all, the semi-final and then the final.
Now, there's the calling of the card, the famous betting at the Stall weekend. What odds was he? What do you go up on Good Friday?
Oh, he's about a 15-1 chance. Any old odds, and it was a terribly wet day that day, I remember. All our gear got soaked, everything got soaked, I got soaked, everybody was soaked, inside and outside, that particular day. talking about foot running, Brian, I was fortunate enough to see some wonderful performances at Stall. Bill Howard was a wonderful runner. He won it twice. He was a marvellous fellow. He came from Albury, I think he came from, and won those two. He was the second man... Or the first man, was he? Yes, the first man to win two Stall Gifts. And 66-67, Bill W.G. Howard. Frank Banner was another great runner, great stylist. John Tolman, but John Stoney, he was another champion.
Foley in 70 and 72.
Barry Foley won, was the second of the runners to have won it twice. Mm. Barry won on two occasions, yeah. Very good runner too. Some marvellous performers, and also in the distant ranks we had some great runners. Vin Dowie is a runner that comes to mind with me from Port Fairy. He was a very good runner.
It was a big weekend up there at Stall, wasn't it?
Beautiful weekend. Beautiful weekend. Very good. It seemed to go for a long time.
It did too.
Well, you've been there. You knew what it was like.
Yeah, I loved it. It was a great part of my learning curve of race broadcasting, and I'm glad I had the opportunity. John Russell, my special guest this morning. Always great to catch up with JR. After this break, we're back, and we're going to be talking about those wonderful Melbourne Cup calls. JR, Johnny Russell, our guest this morning on This Is Your Racing Life. Now, John, the first of the Melbourne Cups for you, you did a long apprenticeship, but the first one came up, and it was Golden Black in 1977.
Yes, I'll never forget it. As you know, Brian, it's always been the ambition of any budding race caller to call a Melbourne Cup, and you're lucky to call one. I was lucky enough to call 20. The first of them was Golden Black in 1977, and I'll never forget on the morning of the race, the phone went at 7 o'clock, and I picked up the phone and nothing came out of my mouth. I wanted to say good morning, but nothing came out. And it went through my head immediately, I can't call the Melbourne Cup, I've got no voice. But it was nerves of the stomach, obviously, because about half an hour later I came good and everything was right. And it was lucky because you hope you get everything right in the Melbourne Cup. It's the pinnacle. Most people listen to it. You've got big audiences as a rule, and you've got to make sure you've got everything right. And the two stars, of course, of that Melbourne Cup were Golden Black, trained by Bart Cummings, and Reckless, trained by Tommy Woodcock. And I made sure in running that I had them firmly in my sights. Wherever they were, I was going to keep an eye on them, you know. And it was, I couldn't have scripted it better because everything went to plan, and it was a dead set two horse duel over the last furlong of the race. And Golden Black was able to outstay Reckless. And another good horse who was to subsequently win a Melbourne Cup, Hyperno, finished in third place that day.
This is the 1977 Melbourne Cup, and the voice of racing in that particular era was John Russell to thousands and thousands of people right around Australia and beyond Australia, the Cup in 1977.
On the rails next is Happy Union, there followed by Unaware. Further back is Salamander looking for a runner, and back behind them around the outside goes Reckless, followed by Golden Black as they turn for home. 500 metres left to go now, and down on the inside, Hyperno's dash to the lead. Hyperno's got a glorious run on the inside to go up and take the lead. It's clear from Major Till down the outside. Family of Man there, followed by Unaware. Golden Black is finishing very fast out deep on the track, and so is Reckless, coming down with about 250 to go, and Hyperno about to be tackled by Golden Black. Golden Black on the outside has got to the front. Reckless is coming after it. Golden Black in front, 100 to go from Reckless, joining in. Golden Black tackled by Reckless on the inside. Golden Black the outer, Reckless the rails. Golden Black just in front. Golden Black will win the cup. Golden Black has won it from Reckless. Hyperno third.
Great call, JR.
Thanks, mate. And that was the day that Sir John Kerr had that altercation with the crowd, you might note.
Yes, I remember it well.
Yes. Anyway, that was 1977, done and dusted. Then R1, of course, next year, Harry White beating Dandaleith and Carew. The following year, Hyperno came out and in a very, very close finish, got the better of Salamander in the last stages.
I had a double going that year. I remember Mighty Kingdom into Hyperno. I had $20 on the double at 200 to 1. So I had Hyperno going for 4,000. I was standing directly behind you, and we didn't really know on the line because the heads were bobbing. Salamander Higgins and Hyperno Harry White on the line.
Well, there was a classic case, as you know, Brian, of two magnificent riders and two great stayers fighting at the finish of a race. It reminded me greatly of Roy Higgins' first Cup win on Light Fingers, when he and Johnny Miller on Zaima had that desperate battle to the line, you know, that particular year of 1965. And it's always a marvellous thing to see great riders and great horses vying for victory in those distance races, or any race for that matter.
For me, working with you, I was now number two to you with the retirement of Bert Brighton, and you took over, as you say, in the spring of 1977. But the signs sort of in the early 80s, 82, 83, the signs weren't good as far as the direction of retaining the racing coverage at 3UZ. And a chance came for me to move to 3DB to work under Bill Collins in 84. And I took that chance because the future didn't look good at 3UZ.
It was a terrible future, as it turned out to be, because we all got the chop actually in the December of that year. I often said to different people, what did you think went wrong? In fact, Maurie Kavanagh quoted it best of all, I thought, where he said it was monumental blunders at management level, which, of course, we thought more than that. It was terrible what happened to that station. It was on top of the world, and to have it destroyed in such a manner was just haunts me to this day, really.
Yes, I know. And there was you, and Peter Donegan was number
Craig
two.
Willis was
Craig
there,
Willis, yeah. Ronnie Hawkswell. And
Craig
those
was
boys.
Pretty lucky, because when he left that day, about a week later he got the job as assistant to Darren Hinch at 3AW, and he's never looked back. Of course, he's the voice of the AFL now, and a great bloke too, Craig.
Bob Cornish was the manager at the time, and they went down this path, which was never ever going to work 3UZ at the time. They went down the path of talkback radio and tried to mingle talkback radio with the racing coverage on an afternoon.
Quite ridiculous, because AW were successful at what they were doing. They weren't interfering with 3UZ. 3UZ were doing best of what they knew, and for that to happen was just quite extraordinary. Quite extraordinary.
So there you were, and you're in your 50s, but still had a lot to give and still a wonderful broadcaster, but you're out with nothing to do.
That's right, although I did call Melbourne Cups for 2UE and 3KZ asked me to call the Cup a couple of times too. That was because with the AW, or at least the UE situation with UZ, they still needed a caller for Melbourne races on 2UE. It was still functioning, so I did a few broadcasts, but not many. In fact, I was at a loose end for some three or four years, you know, midweek anyway. And I used to go out and go into the old box and call the races. You know, people would walk past and say, look at that poor fool, he's up there talking to himself.
Yeah, it's demeaning too.
It is demeaning. But still, it was a means to an end, because Wonder of Wonders, out of the blue of 1987, came Sky Channel. and judo, I'm pretty certain it was Graham McNeice and John Tapp kicking up for me. I got the job as the Victorian representative for Sky Channel and was there for 15 years.
And that was fantastic. And you and I still continued our association because I was on another channel, but we still used to travel to the race meetings together because we had that great bond and that great friendship that's, you know, went back to the early 70s and is still there to this day. We still had a lot of fun, John.
Oh, my word. And we'll continue, I hope. Although I'm losing a yard in pace these days. I've been at it for a long time.
And the Sky Channel days, we then heard you, of course. And again, you had that national audience with those descriptive, wonderful, crystal clear calls out of Melbourne.
Yes, we did. And we had some very good trips to all the Sky Channel boys. So Coffs Harbour was a fantastic trip. They looked after us admirably. And we were invited everywhere, really. It was really top class, all that going on at Sky Channel. And very good.
Now, did you just walk away from the job? I think it was at about 2003 with Sky, or how did that eventuate?
Well, it eventuated. I was about to retire anyway, but I was driving along one day and there was a post, a telegraph post, and I thought that post's crooked. And I said to my lady friend at the time, that post's crooked. And she said, no, it's not. I said, yes, it is. And I thought there's something wrong here because I just felt out of focus. I made inquiries. In fact, I saw John Tolman and his wife Anne at the races on the following day, and Anne was connected with the optometry situation, and I told her about it. She said, I think it's a bit of a retinal damage you might have. Go and I'll arrange to go and see this ophthalmologist. So he sent me to the ophthalmologist, and he said, I didn't like him either, by the way he treated me. I said to him, he said, oh, you've got AMD. I said, what's that? He said, aged macular degeneration. I said, oh, I suppose a bit of laser treatment will fix that up. He said, no, it won't. You've had it. This brute of a man said, this ophthalmologist. And anyway, it's deteriorated so much so now that's not 100% by any stretch of imagination.
So the sign...
But the signs were there. And then one day at Yarra Glen, the spots became diamonds. So I thought, well, it's time to turn it up. Well, I don't know the jockey's colours because that's your line of attack, isn't it, as we know.
How were you treated by Sky?
Not too well. Not too well. So that's about all I can say about that one too.
Got your drift. Travelling with your racing tours, you started a company with your daughter Suzanne, and it's Farlap Travel, and you've been doing that for a long time.
Yes, well, Farlap's been a great old horse because when I was out of work, we named this agency. Sue said, "What are you going to call it?" I said, "Call it Farlap Travel. You won't get it," but we did get it. We paid $50 and got the title Farlap Travel. It was ours, you know, for as long as we wanted it. It's only appearing in a minor way now, with lessened down to trips to Launceston and Darwin. But it's pretty hard to get customers lately on these big trips now. It's not the same as it was because there are so many diversions. People are going in different directions.
And Darwin, you were the pioneer of the racing tours up to Darwin back in the 70s.
That's right. Well, Bill Condon, who a lot of people in the station this morning, SEN, will remember, was quite a character. And he came to me in the passageway at 3 years ahead when he was part of the Turf Talk team, you know, that great and humorous show that was run by Bert Bryant. Mm. And he says, would you like to go to Darwin for the Darwin Cup? He had a bit of a little thing in his voice. And I said, yes. I said, I'd like, how am I going to get there? He said, I'll get your ticket. You'll be right. So he got me the ticket and away I went. And it was a marvellous day because there were only five races on that day, in the Darwin Cup day. Four of them had three runners and the Cup had eight runners. And it was won by a horse called Son of Cyrus, carrying 10 stone 10. It was an outcast of Bart Cummings' team, you know, broken down, but this lady up there got it right, and it came out and won the Darwin Cup. Yeah. But getting from, in those days, the climate being as it was, cold in Melbourne in July, as you can imagine, to the warmth of Darwin, was just fantastic. And Brian Foley went with me. He used to be a publican at Ballarat, dear old Brian. He's not with us anymore, unfortunately. He and I went on the trip, and we were greeted at the airport by Bill McNabb, a former horse trainer, with a nice Frigi box full of stubbies to mark our entrance to Darwin.
They wouldn't have lasted long either.
Well, they'd like a glass or two up there.
Yeah, it's funny about that. And your love of Carlton, the Blues. Now, how did you go through the 70s and 60s, 70s and 80s when they got to finals and they won finals? How did you get time off?
Well, I was in my contract. And I believe Dickie Mertens has put it in the winning post too. Good on you, Dick. Well, he's right anyway, because it was part of my contract when Lou Bennett was there as the manager, as you know, wonderful man he was, that when Carlton were in the grand final, I had the day off. No strings attached at all. That was it. And he adhered to that too. He was quite happy about that.
He was a great manager, wasn't he?
He was. Mm. But see, sadly for your old team, Brian... we beat, in what, 679 was it? We beat Collingwood, a team called Collingwood.
Yes.
And then in 81 we beat a team called Collingwood.
Don't go
anywhere. And of course, I forgot about the 70s we beat a team.
Oh, John, please.
I'm sorry, mate, but I had to say the name.
You've upset the morning. When you reflect back 53 years all up of race broadcasting and you look at where we are now, with callers, we've got Greg Miles retiring now, and I'm still going. I think I'll do one more Melbourne Cup.
You're coasting, Brian.
No, I'm not coasting. I'm enjoying it, but I'm probably lucky because my second coming, so to speak, was just doing it around carnival time, and there's no great pressure. There is pressure at carnival time, but I'm not doing it every day of the week, and I couldn't.
No, I still say it's pressure. You're saying it's not, but I know it is. And congratulations, by the way, too, to Greg for the marvellous job he's done, you know, over the years. He's been a real ornament to the race calling profession.
Yeah, wonderful guy, and you feel very proud of someone who you work alongside to see them achieve what they've achieved. And Greg's a special caller.
He sure is, yes.
Now, John, so your health at the moment, how are you travelling?
Well, I've seen better days, obviously. I mean, this situation that I'm in, this macular trouble, is a slow burnout sort of thing, for want of a better expression, you know, and it's not that good at the moment, I must say.
Life's been a little bit tough personally too in the last 12 months.
Well, it couldn't have been any worse. We lost our daughter, Julie, which was a shocking thing to happen to a darling little girl, and I'll never get over it, really. And then we had this fire here, which was another thing, another knock, or brick bat, whatever you want to call it, you know. So it's
the fire at the back of the house.
Yeah, the fire at the back of the house. So it's taken the sting out of me. It'll take a while to get over it.
Yeah, you'll be happy to see the end of this year.
Yes.
Yeah. And, John, the races, I see you occasionally, but do you sort of, what's your scene with going to the races?
Oh, I don't go as often as I used to, but the future's bright, I feel. The stake money's fantastic, Brian, as you know. So many people are getting involved. That's your sphere, isn't it, at the moment? And, you know, prize money's excellent. It's right down to eighth place, and, well, it's in good shape, looking at it from my observations.
If you're not at the races, say, on a Saturday, will you watch them? Will you listen to them?
Oh, yes. I don't miss them. I watch them. You know, it's always great, and Racing.com are doing a fabulous job in presentation right through the
it's
week, for that matter.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, yeah. So travelling again, Darwin again next year?
Well, all being well, my 44th visit this year. But times are changing, and, well, you never know what's around the corner.
You know, in my time, and it's well over 40 years of being involved in the sport with calling, and you know, I remember that day vividly of going with you, teaming up with you back in June of 1972. It's pretty hard when you reflect back to think that you and I have never had a crossword.
Never had a crossword. Couldn't find a way to have a crossword, I don't think.
It's been a wonderful friendship, John.
We enjoyed all the good things of life, it could be said, Brian.
Yes, we did.
Covered all aspects.
We had a lot of fun along the way, and I'm deeply indebted to you for taking me under your wing, and you're such a mentor, but such a great mate.
And thank you very much for that, and it was great to have you working with me, and we worked so well together. Everything seemed to click into place. That's why it was always one or two on the league ladder.
What was your favourite call?
Probably gold and black, I'd say, in the Melbourne Cup that particular year. Kiwi was another one.
Amazing win.
Kiwi was was stone motherless last on the turn.
Well, I think he was still about six lengths off them with 200 metres to go.
He was an outstanding horse, Kiwi. But there have been some good winners, of course. Some of the horses, I've seen some wonderful horses, obviously, over my career in racing. Maccabi Diva, 3 Melbourne Cups, you know. Black Caviar, not that I was calling at the time, but Black Caviar's 25 out of 25, you know.
What about Winx?
And Winx is a champion, outstanding champion, Winx. We had the great horses of the 70s, Sunline and Northerly, all those sort of horses. Great jockeys I've been fortunate enough to see, and also been involved in the Emirates Melbourne Cup tour, as you have been, and seeing so many lovely people over our journeys has been a wonderfully rewarding thing for me to carry with me as I go through life.
Well, you've been a wonderful friend, JR. That's been your nickname for as long as I can remember after the TV series Dallas. You've been a great friend to so many, not only in racing, but in all aspects of the sport. Good health to you, mate. Have a good Christmas and have a terrific New Year.
And thank you, Brian, very much for thinking of me and all the nice words you've said. And good luck to all your listeners. And you have a very, very popular session there. You're greatly admired as an interviewer, and keep it going that way and you'll never look back.
Good on you, Johnny. Johnny Russell, special guest, a very good friend on This Is Your Racing Life.